Hey, everybody, it's Tommy Canalig, and welcome to Before the Lights Podcast, the show to find out how those in sports, music, and entertainment made their mark. I want to do a special shout out to Jeff Haraney, Larry Henry, Missy Meidel, and Dave Thiel, the new members of our members area group. For information on how you can join the group, stay tuned to the end of the podcast. Joining us today is a guitar slinger, singer, songwriter, founder of Granddaddy Mims Moonshine. He has distinct vocals, is the lead singer of Waymore's Outlaws, and a former member of the Wailers, a Waylon Jennings band. From Blairsville, Georgia, please welcome to the show, Tommy Townsend. Tommy, welcome to Before the Lights.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to go on your journey here with my listeners.
Yeah, heck yeah. Well, I'm glad to be here with you today.
At 5 years old, you're standing on your bed with a microphone.
Yeah.
Who are you singing to?
Gosh, I guess it was just the audience in the mirror.
Is that your first recollection of music then at five, or does it go before then?
That's kind of my first recollection of it. Yes. My dad, he was big into bluegrass and stuff, and he loved Bill Monroe and all that, and was actually offered a job with Bill Monroe in, I think, 1957 or 59, and him and my mom had just gotten married, and he said that back then they all rode in an old station wagon and everything, and he didn't feel like doing that, but he said he wished he would have, later in years after I got to playing music, he said he wished he would have done that, you know, just for the experience of it, so he could tell me about it. So, but yeah.
At age 13, you're on a family vacation driving to Panama City, Florida, and your uncle pops in an 8-track. When he popped in the 8-track, I'll let you say who it was and how that changed your life.
Yeah, it was, I mean, we were going on a vacation. I was riding my aunt and uncle, and he popped in an 8-track of Waylon Jennings' Old Waylon. And I remember hearing Luckenbach, Texas, and I'm thinking, wow, that is really cool. And so I guess it was after that a little bit, and I was playing in a little band, you know, playing drums, because that's my first instrument was drums. And so I just, you know, I love that. And my mom and dad actually had gotten me, you know, a couple albums of Waylon. I remember it was like they got me Old Waylon and Waylon Live and a couple of those things. And so being a drummer, Richie Albright, the way he played drums really is what turned me on to that thing, because it wasn't just, you know, standard country. It was, had a little bit more rock feel to it, I guess, at that time. And I was in seventh grade, I think, and so a couple of friends of mine wanted to do a band and back this girl that was going to be in the middle school talent show. So anyway, we practiced with her, I remember, several times. And then right at the end before the talent show, she backed out. And so we thought, well, we'll go ahead and do it. And for some reason, I said, well, I'd like to try singing. And I did, playing drums. And I remember we played the song, I'm a Ramblin' Man, Waylon's I'm a Ramblin' Man. And that was kind of the start of it right there, you know. And then I remember seeing Waylon around that time, too. My mom and dad, we went to a show in Gainesville, Georgia. And then later on, a couple of Hell's Angels always rode with Waylon doing security. And my mom and dad got us talking to him at a show at Lanier Land in Cumming, Georgia, and said, said our son really loves Waylon. And so we brought him to the show. And he says, well, Waylon really loves kids. And he said, meet me down here after the show and I'll take Tommy back there to meet him. And that's how all that happened. And so just, you know, every time they were back in the area, we'd go see him, got to know in the band and everything. And then just one thing led to another. And he had, I guess, you know, when I was like 18, I guess, he invited me on stage to sing with him. Good hearted woman, and mamas don't let your babies grow to be cowboys. And then he and his bass player, Jerry Bridges, actually started working with me in the very late 80s and taking me in the studio and recording stuff on me. And we did stuff up until the late 90s.
Waylon Conway Twitty, Vern Gosden, Keith Whitley, Hank Jr., and Willie Nelson have influences on you. What is it? God, yeah. What is it, Tommy, about that old country that resonates so deeply with you?
Man, I don't know. I guess it's because those singers were true singers, and they their songs told a story, and you know it was all about that, and it wasn't about all the business stuff and everything. And they were, you know, they loved music, and I loved music, and that's what I still do today. You know, is not trying to get the number one record on Billboard or whatever, which would be nice, but you know, it was all about the songs and all about the feel of the song and the music and all that. You know, that's what I like about all those guys. And I've told people, I said, yeah, if you take Waylon and Conway Twitty and Vern Gosden and little Hank Jr. and George Strait and Keith Whitley, cook them in a pot all day and you'll probably get Tommy Townsend.
I like that. I understand the first time you were on stage, you played drums in a local square dance band with your dad who sang, and you said played bluegrass guitar, and you had some cousins were there as well. What do you recall about that first time being on stage?
Oh, that was the greatest thing in the world, I thought, because like I said, my cousins, I had a square dance band of John and Clayton Nixon, the Country Cousins, and my dad played bass guitar with them. And so I got to playing drums at 5 years old, and I was so little that I couldn't reach the pedals, you know, on the hi-hat and the kick drum. So I would just play the snare and play a closed hi-hat or a cymbal. And, you know, that was my first love of getting into it and realizing that, I love music.
I also understand that somehow, and I'll let you tell the story to me and the listeners, you end up using Waylon's guitar on stage with him.
Yes. This one night he invited me out to sing at the time that Waylon and Jerry were producing some stuff on me. This was in the later 90s when he was starting not to feel real well or whatever. And so I'd brought my guitar and everything, and the guitar tech said, so Waylon's not going to call you out to about halfway through the show. He goes, if you want to, I'll put some new strings on your guitar. And I'm like, cool, that'd be great. So it was only about three songs into his set, maybe three or four songs into his show. And he called me out to sing and play. And the guitar tech only had like three or four guitar strings on my guitar. And he goes, well, just use Waylon's guitar. I'm like, oh, cool, you know. So I kind of saunter out on stage, and I said, Waylon, I said, David Page, I believe was the guitar tech's name, said, David only has a few strings on my guitar. And he said, just use yours. And he turned around to me and he goes, well, this friendship shit's just going too far. And then he took his guitar off and he gave it to me, and I put it on. He goes, here you go, Hoss, have fun. I was just kidding with you. You know, so that was great.
That's a great story. Waylon's also was part of The Day the Music Died. He gave up his seat in that tragic plane crash in Clear Lake, Iowa. Did he ever speak to you about the effects of that to him?
You know, I mean, not directly. I don't think he ever did. You know, maybe we'd be all sitting around the office or something, you know, and sometime, and he would say something about it. You know, I do know that somehow that story, I think, gets misconstrued a lot. As I say about Waylon and the Big Bopper flipping a coin, you know, and the story goes, as I know it, and I think I'm pretty much correct, is the Big Bopper wasn't feeling well. And so, and they were in Clear Lake, Iowa, and the Big Bopper wasn't feeling well. And so the Big Bopper came to Waylon and said, hey, Waylon, would you mind if I fly and you ride the bus? And Waylon says, well, if it's okay with Buddy, it's okay with me. So anyway, you know, that's how that happened, mm-hmm. you know, because there's, I think, you know, a lot of, I've even read, you know, that Waylon and the Big Bopper flipped a coin.
Yeah, I have too.
I think that's another story. But anyway, yeah.
Tommy, when did you begin writing songs?
You know, I began writing probably as a, in my early to mid teens.
Okay.
And then after moving to Nashville in 95, I got a publishing deal there and was able to write with some of the, you know, biggest writers in country music. You know, that is a whole different craft within itself, you know, writing songs. And I used to write things and I would never play them to anybody because I was so timid, you know, thinking, oh, they'll laugh at this. And, I mean, that wasn't until really later in life that I got to where I would share what I'd written with a, you know, a hit songwriter or something, you know? So that, and that's something that still I work on today is, you know, writing songs and luckily I've co-written enough with people that I kind of, you know, have learned that craft a lot better.
One of the songs you wrote is If I Had Back Now What I Had Back Then, which was performed mm-hmm. by Alan Jackson.
Yeah. I heard he performed that song. We had pitched that to him. I wrote that with Bud Renault and Robin Blakely. And that was been several years ago. And Keith Stegall, that was producing Alan at the time, I think heard it and Alan had sang it at a song at a concert of his. Yeah. So I do know Jamie Johnson actually recorded the demo. I did a demo version, but Jamie actually did a version of it too.
For our listeners that may not have heard of you, and I've listened to a lot of your music and it's very well done. It's good stuff.
Oh, thank you.
What is your sound for my listeners that are going to be going to Amazon or their Spotify and typing in your name? What is their sound that they're going to hear?
Well, it's a little bit, I guess, outlaw country. I don't consider myself mainstream at all. It's got the, they call it outlaw country today or whatever. I remember Marty Stewart. I read a quote on him a few years ago that said that the most outlaw thing you could do in Nashville, Tennessee these days is play country music. So, but it's a little bit of that, I guess mine more fits into the Americana, you know, stream. And it's, you know, it's about the music. It's not about, you know, the music and the song and that's what people could, you know, get from what they hear from what I've done.
In your opinion, do you think the younger generation is starting to discover old country music?
Oh, definitely. Because, I just, you know, we toured with Shooter Jennings, Waymore's Outlaws did for, I guess, 4 or 5 years. And, it was so cool. Because all the shows that we did, there were folks there from probably 20, 25 years old up to 75, 80 years old, you know? And I think they've discovered that, you know, on the internet, you know, Spotify and Pandora and all that stuff. And, it was cool to see kids out there because, you know, we would open the show for Shooter and we'd do usually 45 minutes or an hour. And of course it was all the guys that played on all the records of Waylon's, you know, in the studio and on the road. So, you know, it was just like, you know, you could see the kid, you know, younger people's eyes is like, whoa, this is really cool. You know? So yeah, I think, you know, country music is actually coming back around a little bit.
I would agree with you. It's starting to get more momentum. You're starting to hear about it more than you did just a few years ago.
Yeah, definitely. And, so I'm really proud of that. I don't know if you know, Shooter produced a record on me. I don't know if that's one of the ones you heard.
Turn Back the Clock,
Turn Back the Clock.
So speaking on that, Tommy, what was it that made Shooter Jennings realize that you were ready to go solo when you were with Waymore's Outlaws?
Well, we had, you know, I've known Shooter's probably like, I don't know, 8 or 10 years younger than me. And we've always known each other or whatever, but it wasn't until when we started touring, with Shooter, he would come to me, you know, and the cool thing about it was, is we got to do our show, you know, and I got to be the singer, and I'm also a player. So I liked the part of actually doing that. And then we were Shooter's band, backup band. So I'd get to play guitar and play lead and sing harmony and just lay back and get to play. So I, you know, it was funny. There's no egos in that band at all. Nobody tried to outshine anybody else or anything. It was all about the music. And so Shooter, our tour manager or whatever, we would a lot of times after the show, we'd go hang out at some, dim bar somewhere where there wasn't nobody, or we'd go by the hotel room and hang out and just, you know, talk and listen to music and wind down and all that. And I remember Shooter saying one night, we're talking, he goes, man, I love your electric rhythm play. You know, said that you just got a thing of your own so he talked about that a couple of times. And then as time went on, he was talking about, you know, man, I like to take you in the studio and we'd cut some stuff, you know. So that we started cutting stuff, I think, in 2015, something like that, 2016. And so when we went, we actually recorded the tracks in Hollywood and with some players that Shooter knows, which is actually his band. And they're just ungodly talented. So when we went in the studio to do that, Shooter was like, why don't we just do a basic rhythm track? And I played just electric rhythm, and it was bass and drums. And that's all we recorded going down. There was nothing else there, just to get that feel. And then I went back and did some more guitars and acoustic guitars, and Shooter went back and did some guitars and piano and all the overdubs. But that's how we started the project, just three of us in the studio. And Shooter is just an amazing producer. He just knows his way around everything, and he'll tell you what he hears and what he doesn't hear. And, you know, it's just great. You know,
some of the singles on that Turn Back the Clock LP, Drinking, The Eye, and you also did a bluesy rendition to Gordon Lightfoot's Sundown, which I thought was excellent. Listeners, please check out Sundown. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to Turn Back the Clock so you guys can click on it and listen right through it. If you would talk about the single, The Eye, because that one I think is really good.
Yeah, that was a Brandi Carlile song. Actually, the twins that work with her, Tim and Hanseroth, I think, wrote that. But I believe that was a song that she did several years ago. And I can't remember the year, but that was actually the first song that Shooter brought to me. Was that song. I said, man, you need to record this. And he said, you know, listen to it and live with it and let me know what you think. And from the first time I heard it, it was like, wow, that is just that's a powerful song.
Yes.
So, so we recorded that one. And then, Drinking, Holly Williams, Hank's daughter, wrote that song. And, she had put it on one of her earlier albums. And, you know, there's two great songs we found. Actually, a friend of mine turned me on to that song, Drink It. I had never heard it before. And so it sent it to me. And I thought, well, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I sent it to Shooter. He's like, yeah, let's do that. And Sundown, I've always loved it. My sister, she's several years older, you know, 8 or 9 years older than me. And she was always into the, you know, the 70s rock or whatever. And I remember her maybe having that album or a cassette or something and hearing that song a long time ago. And that song struck me back then. And so, and every time I'd record something in some way or something, I never got a chance to do it. So I asked Shooter, I said, man, I've always loved Sundown. I said, can we record that song? He's like, yeah, man, we're here. Let's do it. See how it does. So we did that, and it turned out really well. Mm-hmm. And I know WSM played it for the first time, and Devin O'Day, I don't know if you know Devin.
I don't.
She was a DJ there. This is 2-3 years ago. And she's like, man, she said, I think this has got Gordon Lightfoot's run for its money. And I'm like, wow. I said, thank you so much. Cause that, you know, Gordon Lightfoot to me, he's incredible.
There's another single you did that I don't believe is part of the Turn Back the Clock LP called She's Why, Where did that single come from?
That song was written by myself and Scott Brantley and his David Brantley, his brother. Mm. I had had a publishing deal with Dan Hodges Music, and Carson Chamberlain, which is a very well-known producer in Nashville, were producing them. And so he had got them to write with me. They came in that morning, I remember, and they had the title. And so we just started just writing it, you know, and stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, being married myself and everything, and about the fishing and, you know, don't fish no more, and holding the purse at the mall. I was kind of throwing these things out, you know? So, you know, we wrote that in like, I think we maybe wrote it in one day and then came back later and did some editing on it. And they recorded it for their album. Scott Brantley actually has it out on his album now. And that's something I may record down the road as well.
What was it like working with and knowing the legend Richie Albright, who is the drummer and founder of the Waylon Jennings Band?
Oh man, Richie is such a great guy. He is just, I can't say enough about him. He is just a stand-up guy. And all of the guys in the band, it was like being out with all your favorite uncles or something, you know, cause I was definitely the young one in the group. Richie, you know, we did three albums as Waymore's Outlaws, and Richie helped produce them all. And it's so cool because Richie won't give you any slack, you know, at all. We'd be in the studio and he'd say, "Oh, you got a better vocal in you." And Richie's not a singer, but he really knows his way around the studio as well, and singers and all that. But Richie was just an awesome guy. He was always he's like a natural upper or something. You know, every time you're around him, there was something always funny going on or some story going on or something. And he was just so quick-witted, and he was such a stand-up gentleman, you know.
September 2021, a big congrats goes out to you. You signed with BFD Audium Label in Nashville. What's the feelings like signing that contract?
Well, it was so weird. I've signed a couple of other ones in my day that didn't work out or whatever, but Craig Campbell, who's my publicist, and he's been a great friend for so long, and he's helped me. You know, we've been friends for gosh, over 10 years, I guess. And he's pitched me to every label in town or whatever. And for some reason, I guess I was too country. I don't know. But we were talking about Audium and he texted me and he said, I sent your music. I guess, and it was the stuff that Shooter had produced to Audium, because they were a label. And then they, I guess someone else, a bigger label, bought them up. And then they came back out last year. And we're signing acts. And so Chuck Rhodes, the general manager in Nashville, Craig had sent it to him. And Chuck just emailed Craig back like pretty immediately and said, we want to talk with him. So I'm like, well, that's cool. So we had a meeting set up, and I'm thinking, well, here we're going to go into the meeting, and there's going to be a bunch of people in there, and they're going to all say, "Oh yeah, we love it. We'll have to think about it, and then we'll get back to you," or whatever. And Craig and Chuck and I sat down, and Chuck is the first thing out of his mouth, "Man, I love your voice. I love what you're doing." And he said, "We'd like to sign you to a deal." And I'm like, kind of sat there for a minute. I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. You know? And I told him, I think I said, "Now, I'm not your 25-year-old dude coming to town here." You know, I said, "I'm a little older now." I said, "It may take more work for you. I don't know." And we all laughed. But he had liked the record that Shooter produced. And then, they got me a deal together, and we all, you know, looked at it and agreed to everything, and then signed it just about a month ago, I guess. But it was so funny, over the summer, I was in a meeting with them, and I was just playing them songs that I had written, because we were originally going to do, you know, just do a new album or whatever. And so in passing, I think it was Craig says, well, you know, Tommy's got this record that that Waylon Jennings and Jerry Bridges produced several years ago before Waylon passed away, and Waylon's playing and singing on it. And they're like, you got what? And I'm like, yeah, I got, you know, so they wanted to hear it, and I had to go dig it out of the box. And so sent it to them, and the people in New York loved it, and everybody in the Nashville office loved it. And so Chuck said, well, we would love to put that out as your first album just because of the story. And then we'll do another, you know, do a new album later. So I'm like, man, that's great, because, you know, that it was a record that was never released, and not many, very many people have heard it. So, and it's a stand up record in today's times. You know, it was actually, like I say, it was the stuff that Waylon and Jerry started, recording me in the late '80s, you know, and I was still a teenager at that time. And then some of the stuff that's on it was some of the stuff that we recorded in the late '90s. There was about 20 or 21 tracks that we did all together during that, you know, time. Mm. And so we picked the best 10 and went back in, and you know, I re-sang everything, and we just, you know, kind of revamped some stuff on it a few years ago. And so, yeah, that's the record that's coming out. I think there's a single going to be released on Spotify in January, another one in February, then the album will come out in March. So I didn't write any of the songs on it. There were songs that Waylon had in his catalog of stuff, of these writers. I mean, it was in his writers like Dean Dillon, Roger Murrah, Fred Knobloch, Troy Seals and Waylon wrote a song on there. So I'm really excited about it. That album is actually going to see the light of day.
And is that the album going to be called Southern Man in 2022?
I think that's what we're going to call it. It may change between now and then.
Sure.
I think that's what we're going to call it. So, you know, it's so funny. I'd Waymore's Outlaws, after Richie's, you know, passing back, and we've done a couple things this year. And we used, Jerry Bridges' son, Jeff, on drums, but he's incredible. But, you know, the Waymore's Outlaws thing is kind of stuff that we'll do every now and then still, probably. But it's so funny. I'd call after we got the deal. I called Jerry. I said, Jiggers, whatever I called him. I said, Jigger, I said, you're getting back in the music business again, whether you like it or not. You know, but it was the band playing on it. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's just fun that it's them playing on it. Richie wasn't on it. It was a time that Richie had taken a hiatus from Waylon. Jeff Hale is playing drums on it that played with him at that time. And, but yeah, it, you know, so we're thinking about, you know, I guess when we do an album release party, and, you know, we'll bring the band in to play those songs again.
So that'll be cool.
Yeah. So you'll have to come to that.
I would love to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tommy, where would you think you would be if Waylon hadn't come into your life?
Oh man, that's a good question. I don't know. You never know about taking different paths or whatever. I don't think it would be the same as if he wouldn't have come into my life. You know, what I've got, you know, the story, the, you know, how he and Jerry helped me and all that stuff. So, you know, that right there is education that you can't buy anywhere.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so, you got life lessons that nobody else could get.
Exactly right. There's nobody that can teach you that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think maybe I would not be, maybe not in the music business at all. I don't know. You know,
have you ever taken time to reflect back on how special it was to be able to hang out with a legend like Waylon Jennings?
I have since I've gotten older. At that time, you know, when you're in your late teens and twenties, you know, and I had kind of, you know, known Waylon since early teens and Jerry and the band and stuff. And it's like you, you don't think about it because you think, well, everybody knows a superstar or something, you know. But it wasn't until I guess maybe back in after Waylon passed away, and we had gotten to be friends. My daughter and Miley actually were on the same competition cheerleading team in Franklin, and so we had gotten to know, you know, Billy Ray and Tish. And we were at a school dance one night back when they were little, and Billy Ray, he and I were sitting there talking, and on the bleachers in the gym, and he's like, "Man," he said, "you got to be one of the luckiest guys alive to have known Waylon, and you know, have him work with you and everything." And I'm sitting there thinking, well, you're the guy with all the money. I didn't say that, but I was thinking that. But, you know, we talked about Waylon because he was a huge Waylon fan. And he and Waylon got to be friends. I don't know if you remember, you know who Carl P. Mayfield is that was in Nashville? He was on KDF 103.3. And he had every Wednesday there. In the late 90s, up until Waylon passed away, I guess they had Waylon Wednesdays. Waylon would come in and just kind of stir things up a little bit, you know, and somehow I think Billy Ray was on the show one day when Waylon was in there, and they got to be friends and stuff. And, you know, so that's how Billy Ray and I got started. Billy Ray started talking about that, you know, with all the, you know, you got to be the luckiest dude alive. And so I guess it was at that point that I started thinking back, yeah, man, that was really cool times, mm-hmm. you know? And it's funny, I didn't ever really talk about it that much, you know? So it was, I mean, I feel so fortunate because, you know, any singer in Nashville would give their left, you know what,
right.
to been around that, you yeah. know?
Yep.
And I, you know, and it's so funny these days, you know, the outlaw thing and all this, and you know, some of these singers, oh, well, I'm an outlaw. And it's like, you know, outlaw wasn't about getting drunk and raising hell on stage and slapping grannies and all that stuff. You know, it was all about the music. Yeah. Instead of all of that, you know, and it's like real outlaws don't say they were outlaws. Waylon hated that term, you know, outlaw. He didn't like it at all.
I want to shift gears just here a little bit. 2016, you started Granddaddy Mim's Moonshine. It's located in Blairsville, Georgia, about 2 hours from Chattanooga, Tennessee, using the same recipes your grandfather used, who was Jack Mim McClure. He was a top moonshiner in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Georgia. Who was your grandfather? So let's start there.
Well, I don't remember him. He passed away. I was only like one or something. But he was just a guy, in the area of North Georgia that, I mean, he made liquor. He didn't make any excuses about it. Everybody just kind of went his way. And, you know, he was just a Zell Miller. I don't know if you're familiar with Zell Miller. He was the governor. He was lieutenant governor, Georgia governor, and then went on to U.S. Senator. They actually tried to get him to run for president. He said he didn't want the job. But anyway, Zell had written a few books, and the first one that he had come out with in 1973, 74 or something, there was a section of it dedicated to my grandfather. And he called him the John Wayne of the North Georgia Mountains. And my grandfather was a big old guy, a big old, you know, probably 6'4", 6'5", weighed probably 230 pounds or something like that. And he just, I don't know, I guess sometime during the 30s, he got to making liquor, you know, and made some of the best around. And so it was a friend of mine in Anaheim, California, Jack Keeter. We were talking about it one day, and I said, yeah, I said my grandfather was a, Jack was actually talking about Patron tequila or something. And then we were out in West Texas together. Jack's great aunt had passed away, and she loved country music and never got to go to Nashville. And Jack had called me and said, hey, said, would you be willing to come out here to Aunt Margaret. I think her name was Margaret, Aunt Margaret's funeral, and sing. Said she loved country music and never got to go to Nashville. Said, how much would you charge to, you know, do that? I'm like, man, you know, Jack, you and I have been friends for a long time. I said, I was going to do it. I said, pay for my flight. So anyway, we were out in, he flew in from LA and I flew from Nashville, and we were out riding out in the outskirts of Lubbock, Texas, where he was from. And, you know, and so he got talking about old moonshiners, and one thing led to another. That's when I said, yeah, I said, my grandfather was a famous moonshiner back in North Georgia. And he's like, can you get your hands on the recipe? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I've heard stories about it and stuff. And, you know, one thing led to another in talking. And then went and done the funeral. And then he was getting ready the next day to fly back to L.A. And I was flying back to Nashville. And I said, was you really serious about that? So he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, there's stupid amounts of money in alcohol. So, and Jack is a financial planner by trade. And he and I own some music publishing and stuff together. And he's like, if you can find the recipe and we can find a distillery and a distributor in Georgia, you know, to make it and distribute it, he goes, I'll help you get started. So I'm thinking, well, cool. So I got back home and I never read the newspaper that much. So I was in Nashville one day and I looked down at the Tennessee and then it said prohibition whiskey being made legally again in Tennessee. So I thought, I better read this article. So I read it. And I called him and I called Jack about it. And a few days later, he came in, he flew into town and we had a meeting with him. And so they were at capacity of what they were making. I thought, well, you know, me being from Georgia and everything, I'd really like it to be made in Georgia. And they gave us a distillery name that's in Milledgeville, Georgia. And they started, and I got the recipe from my Uncle George, my mom was the youngest child. And so I asked her about it, you know, and she goes, well, Lord, son, you know, I just remember people coming in all hours of night in the house and, you know, and all this stuff. And just all these things happening and everything. And so anyway, my mom was actually totally against it to begin with, you know, because she said, you know, moonshine broke up our family and just, wow, like, you know, everything. But anyway, so, you know, we got the recipe and she said, well, call your Uncle George. Said he helped us make it, or helped, you know, your granddad father make it before he went in service. So I called him. He said, well, there never was a written down recipe, but I remember, you know, how he did it. So he just emailed it to me. So found a distillery in Middle Georgia to make it at first. And so we were shopping to distributors and we hadn't made the first batch yet. So the local paper in Blairsville did a thing about me bringing the moonshine back out. So we'd not made a drop at that point. A distant cousin of mine actually worked at United Distributors in Atlanta, in Smyrna, outside of Atlanta. And she got the paper and she went back to the CEO of United and says, we are carrying this, right? So it's like just one thing after another just fell into place. And then, we were just doing a few cases a month or whatever. And then in 2016, all the county officials, you know, wanted to put it, I'm here in Blairsville now, here in Blairsville for tourism. And they all helped me get all that passed. It took about 2 years to get all the licensing. And so we started making it here in Blairsville in July 4th weekend of 2016. And it's grown to where we were doing like 30, 40 cases a month, you know, and now we're bottling and 1500, 2000 cases a month. We're distributed in Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, and Kentucky and Arizona. And so that, you know, that's kind of how all that happened, just by a fluke conversation.
Listeners, I'm going to put another link to granddaddymims.com in the show notes so you can click on that. And here are all the products, because you may be thinking, well, moonshine, I don't know about moonshine. Yeah, they have 140 proof. They have 100 proof. And then the 96 proof you can get in blueberry, peach, or blackberry. And if that's still too strong for you, they got a 40 proof in peach, blueberry, and wild cherry cobbler, plus an apple brown Betty. Now, if moonshine's not your thing, Owl Town Vodka, original citrus and raspberry guava. So if you're a vodka fan like myself and you don't want to go the moonshine route, go to the link. You can check all that out. Plus, if you're in the area, they have tours plus a museum with Granddaddy Mim's possessions and other items. And the bar in the tasting area is the bar used in the movie Coyote Ugly. How did you get your hands on that?
Well, that was our old location that okay. we were in. The guy that owned that building, he was its collector of stuff. And that was one of the bars used in it. So they say, we're actually in downtown Blairsville now, just right off the square.
Okay.
We outgrew that facility and we had to get a bigger one. We're about to outgrow this one, but, we got it downtown and we have events and we have all kinds of stuff here now. And that we actually are doing a 5-year whiskey. When we started thing, so we got a 5-year whiskey out that's 90 proof and we did a peach whiskey.
Wow.
So that's our two newest products that we have. But, it's so funny. We have people from all over the country coming in here to the distillery to sample our products and we're able to sell, six bottles per person per day and we can do drinks as well. So, and we have concerts here at the distillery. We just had our 5th anniversary. The other night we had about 600 or 700 people here.
Nice.
I played and Brady Seals from Little Texas played and just a couple of my friends from around the area. We had put on a concert here. So
can listeners that are not in those states that you're selling, go to the website and order products to be shipped to them?
They can, certain states allow alcohol to be shipped into that state.
Okay.
And there's just a handful of them. And I can't remember which ones, but you can actually go to our website and click on buy now, I believe. And it takes you to a store in Florida.
Okay.
Called Nick and Moe's and they're able to sell it online. So there's some states that won't allow alcohol to be shipped in from Florida to their state. Some of them do. You'll just have to go through the thing and fill it all out. And then at the end, it will tell you if you can or can't.
Okay.
But I know they, and then there's actually another website. I think it's out of New York. It's called Caskers, CASKERS. And I think .com/.net. They have it as well. And it's the same thing. They'll ship it into your state if it allows it. But, hopefully we're growing and, it'd be a cool thing is one of these days to be in all 50 states, right. We'd have to get a lot bigger and make more liquor to do that now. But I try to cross promote that with my music as well. When we're out in those states anywhere that we right. are. Cross promote it, so nothing goes better than moonshine and country music.
That's right. Again, listeners, show notes, granddaddymims.com link will be there. And also I'll put one to tommytownsendmusic.com. Last thing I saw on the Granddaddy Mims website, which cracked me up, is there's a Frank Sinatra quote that says, alcohol may be man's worst enemy, but the Bible says, love your enemy.
Yeah. I also have this on our moonshine bottles. It's on the vodka or the whiskey bottles, but we also have the saying, please drink responsibly and tithe on Sunday. And where that comes from is my grandfather, like I say, he was, he had a lot of, he was a very good entrepreneur himself back then, but he helped all of the churches in the area. If people back then could not afford food or clothes, he had an account set up at a local store in Hiawassee, Georgia, I believe it was in Hiawassee or Young Harris, one at the time, that he told the owner of the store, he said, if people come in here and they can't afford clothes or shoes, he said, you give it to them, you put it on my account, and I'll come pay you. And he also, like at Christmas time, if there were some unfortunate families, he would make sure they had Christmas. And, underneath all that big macho guy, he had a big old heart too, and so we try to carry on that same thing today, Zell, going back to Zell Miller, which is former governor of Georgia, he's been a family friend too. He passed away a couple of years ago, and or maybe three. And so he was friends with my parents and, you know, everybody in the family. And my dad saw him somewhere. And because after he was from Young Harris as well. And after he retired from politics, he just came back to Young Harris, Georgia. And my dad saw him somewhere and said, tell Tommy when he's in town to come by and see me. And so it was one day I had a few days off, and we came down. And so it was a winter day, and it was kind of snowing. I thought, well, I'll ride over and see Zell and Shirley and see if they're home. And so I went over there, and Zell and Shirley were in the kitchen. I spent probably 2 or 3 hours with them, and I learned a lot of stuff about my grandfather that I didn't know, that I'd never been told, you know. And he told me, he said, you know, as much as he had done in politics, sometimes you think, well, maybe they forget where they came from. And he told me, he said, if it hadn't been for your grandfather and your great uncle, he said, I may have never been in politics, you know, because they helped him. And I think my grandfather kind of financed him a little bit back a long time ago when he was first run for representative or something, you know. And then my great uncle, Guy Pewitt, he was a very smart man. He helped get him out there and everything. So that was a good visit that day I was with him.
It sounds like it. And this has been a really good visit. I've appreciated all the stories, you taking some time and coming on my show Before the Lights. I wish you nothing but success, and I hope I see your name rise up the chart someday.
Oh, I hope so too. So it was sure good to meet you, and thanks for having me on.
You are welcome. Listeners, you can follow the show anywhere podcasts are found. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it, iHeartRadio. You can follow the show. I would greatly appreciate it if you did so. Follow me on Instagram at Before the Lights Podcast. Hey, everybody, join the all new members area on my Before the Lights Podcast website. The Salute Chin Chin package includes access to the extra 5, shout out on a future show, some bonus content. The Zoom calls are going to be starting again soon. Also, we're going to have some rewards for you. Get the brand new limited edition poker chip. It looks absolutely fantastic. You're going to get 10% off all merch as well. Your name added to the show notes. To join for only $7.99 a month, go to beforethelightspod.com/support. That's beforethelightspod.com/support. Thank you for listening to Before the Lights. I'm Tommy Canale. And until next time, everybody, I salute a chin chin.